You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty from the Hinckley Institute of Politics, filling in for Natalie Gochner in the Political Center. On the left is State Senator Jim DeBacchus.
Good morning!
And on the right is State Senator Todd Weiler.
Hi, Morgan.
So let's start with the national news, which of course is still the Kavanaugh hearings. Things keep on piling up. Originally, we just had Christine Blasey Ford.
I thought we had the Kavanaugh hearings like 3 weeks ago.
We did, but we've had a few developments, Senator.
I have not heard about those.
Yeah, so we now have three women that have come forth with some accusations.
Can I try to find the middle ground here?
Please.
Senator Weiler, could you and I sit down and come up with 5 minutes of principles that where we could actually solve this? I mean, Orrin Hatch getting up the minute this woman made the accusation and saying she's making it up, we don't believe her, to the women's groups that are saying it's absolutely true. You know what? The truth is none of us know.
No, I agree.
And there's one thing, in my opinion, that ought to have happened. It would happen, I am sure, under Judiciary Confirmation Chair Weiler. If you do an initial investigation and questions come up, because it's happened, we send out the investigators or the staff. They go out and look up whatever the rumors are, or whatever the stories are, or whether they were truthful. If there would have been another week and let the FBI go do its stuff, give them a 1 week deadline, come back with facts, talk to as many people as you can, because it's different when you talk to Fox News than when you talk to the FBI, and come back and say, look, we don't know for sure, but here's what we found out. Suddenly, we would have a lot more facts to base this on rather than the raw partisanism.
So if you actually go back, and I don't expect you to do this, but if you go back to 1991 and watch the Clarence Thomas hearings, you'll see then Senator Joe Biden in very terse words saying, the FBI does not draw conclusions. They don't make recommendations. If the FBI investigates, what they do is they come back and say, we talked to this person and this is what they said. We talked to this person and this is what they said. We talked to this person. That's all the FBI does
in
these situations.
But isn't that what's needed in this case?
Well,
and
yes, but the FBI,
the
FBI does not work for Congress. It works for it's an executive branch agency. Just like Jim, you and myself as state senators, we can't order Sean Reyes to do something. So in the Clarence Thomas hearings, then President Bush asked for an investigation that was done in 3 days. And so they came back with those transcripts. Today, Trump has not asked for that. And that's his right.
I'm
not saying he shouldn't.
Whatever the blah, blah is.
Yes.
In a correct world, aside from all the political falderall, whether it's the president needed to ask the FBI or whatever, they're all we've got to help separate the fact from the fiction. And if that guy's going to be on the Supreme Court for 30 or 40 years, does he want this hanging over his head if he's totally innocent?
Maybe he does. But here's the problem, I think, and here's why so many people are skeptical, is these allegations surfaced in July. The Democrats sat on them until September. When a vote was scheduled on Kavanaugh, from the committee vote was scheduled, then the first woman came forward. They postponed that. When a second vote was scheduled, then a second woman came forward. Now a third vote's been scheduled, and a third vote.
It's a
sideshow. It looks to someone who wants to be cynical, it looks like maybe they're just trying to drag this out.
It's a sideshow.
Until after the midterm
elections.
Those women
ought to be prosecuted.
So rather than asking the FBI to investigate in July, we're doing this 3 weeks after his confirmation.
Who
cares? No. Someone should care because Dianne Feinstein sat on this for 2 months.
You see, you're just falling into the
partisan. I'm saying why there's controversy.
There's reasons for that, but I'm not going down that road.
This happened allegedly 35 years ago, and she sat on it until there was a vote scheduled.
So one of the things that's interesting with this happening so long ago, and if you look at the polling, it is interesting. Americans are pretty divided with, you know, a third saying they believe her, a third saying they're with Kavanaugh, and a third saying they don't know, which is fair. It is a long time ago.
I agree with Jim.
You're right. None of us know. But it did spur this tweet or this hashtag why I didn't report. And we've heard a lot of stories about women talking about their own sexual assaults and why they didn't.
Shireen Gobani,
Mayor Biskupski.
Yeah. So, I think this is the Me Too 2.0.
Right. So how does the, you know, with the Senate handling this, this is so different from the Anita Hill hearings, which is so interesting also because she's at the University of Utah campus on Wednesday of this week.
She was, yeah.
Yeah. So this is just such a tricky thing, and we've seen our senators, you know, Hatch has been really vocal. Lee has been really he's been quite quiet about this.
But his staff has been
tweeting like crazy.
Outrageous.
Yeah. But one of the things I want to ask you guys, and maybe you especially, Senator Wyler, is also with that polling, Kavanaugh's not popular. If you look at his support, no, don't support, he's the second most unpopular Supreme Court nominee we've had.
Okay.
So why are the Republicans still pushing so hard for
him? Okay. Number one, nobody had heard of Brett Kavanaugh before July 9th. Number two, he's nominated by President Trump, who is...
Well, most people haven't heard of most of these nominees
before, right? Yeah, he's been nominated by President Trump, who's extremely unpopular, and half the country wants him impeached for ambiguous things. And number three, his name has now been dragged through the mud, where he doesn't really have an equal footing. I know he came out and did an interview a couple of days ago with his wife.
Which was interesting in its own right, right? Because he looked like a political candidate. He didn't look like a judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And sorry, keep going.
Yeah, so I don't think it's really fair. I think after Brett Kavanaugh is confirmed, and I fully expect he'll be confirmed by Friday of this week, I think this will go away, just like it did with Clarence
Thomas.
Wait,
confirmed or through the
He'll
through
be
the
nominated.
Committee. Okay.
He'll get the committee nod on Friday.
On Friday.
And then go to a full Senate vote. Of course, you know, there's a couple, you know, people forget that our vice president can break a tie. With John McCain dying, and bless his heart, I love John McCain, that's one more vote the Republicans wouldn't have had 2 months ago, if you know what I mean, and didn't have for Gorsuch. So, you know, unless Olympia Snowe and a few others, you know, Lisa Murkowski, a few other fence sitters, right now I think he's still on a track to be confirmed because we're all talking about things that happened 30, 35 years ago, and it's a he said, she said, and there's no evidence. I mean, there's no physical evidence. And pushing back on Jim, I'm not opposed to an FBI investigation. I don't think there's a lot to be found. I think the New York Times has already talked to everybody, and we kind of know what the witnesses are going to say.
Jim, any final thoughts on this one?
That is an outrageous statement by Republicans. We do,
just
don't want to know the facts.
No, I didn't say that.
We don't want
I said I'm
to
fine.
Know.
I'm fine with an investigation.
Well, you're in the minority. Because they Orrin Hatch just doesn't want to know what the FBI is going to say. You're right. I don't even know why they waited so long. They have their excuses.
Oh, you know
they
why.
Have it.
It's but called the midterm elections.
We want the. But any reasonable person would say, before we put a person on the Supreme Court, we want to clear up the fact whether they're a rapist or not.
Yeah.
So it's got to wait an extra week. And so what? Somebody fumbled it into politics. It is indefensible. And I hope you will all remember this when you go vote, because I think I have the only reasonable, rational position in this, which is we don't know. Let's at least throw the FBI in to get the facts.
Yeah. And as soon as the FBI does an investigation, some porn star attorney is going to come out with a fourth allegation, and then there'll be an investigation. Then there'll be a fifth allegation.
So we shouldn't look
I think we can see the Democrat playbook here.
Well, Senator Wyler, again. So the Supreme Court was really important to Utahns in 2016. They did not get on board with Trump for a long time. And so many conversations with people saying this was, I want those conservative justices. We got Neil Gorsuch, which a lot of Utahns liked. So it almost sounds crass to start talking about the midterms when we're talking about such serious allegations.
Mm-hmm.
But if Kavanaugh doesn't go through and this is such a difficult process, how do Utahns react? Does this affect our midterms?
I don't think it affects the Mia Love, Ben McAdams race, which is only the only close race in Utah right now that I'm aware of. I mean, for you know, on a statewide basis, but let's cut to the chase here. Neil Gorsuch was replacing Scalia, who was a hard right conservative. That's why that wasn't as controversial. But Anthony Kennedy's vote, this is going to swing. Whoever replaces Kennedy makes the court 5-4 for the liberals or conservatives. This is a whole different ball game with a conservative ostensibly replacing a swing voter. That's why the stakes are so much higher this year. And I think that's been lost in the conversation.
Final word on this segment?
Nope. I think the facts speak for themselves.
All right. This is Both Sides of the Aisle. I'm Morgan Lyon-Cotty, joined by Jim DeBacchus and Todd Wyler. In our next segment, we'll talk about local issues. We'll give you some updates on the debate over medical marijuana and the midterm elections. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider a donation to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Senator Todd Weiler on the right.
Jim DeBacchus on the left.
And Morgan Lyon-Cotty in the political center. I want to start this part of our discussion with something that is very emotional, very topical here in Utah, and that's the debate over medical marijuana Proposition 2. And on Wednesday, Robert Gerke published a column reporting that the LDS Church, House Speaker Greg Hughes, and medical marijuana proponents are working on a bill. And it sounds like it's mostly the language in Prop 2. But this has made some waves, in part because what people are speculating is in the bill, and also in part because of the process, the way this is being done. Senator DeBacchus, I just feel like you're going to have some opinions.
Yeah. This is a bad moment in the state of Utah. This is not Prop 2 rehashed. This is 98 pages. This is Marty Stevens, who is the new governor of Utah, coming in and having a seven-hour meeting. And guess what? There were no patients involved in this meeting. This is Libertas, who has been one of the big proponents of this, caving at the last minute here. There was nobody to speak for patients. The language of this 98-page document will not allow any patient to receive marijuana. Although I'm predicting there will be a big press conference to say, we've sat down with everybody and we have made peace. There they are, all the sides, except the provisions in there will not allow medical marijuana to be dispensed. This is more of that shady backroom politics, the way it happens so often in the state of Utah. And it's too bad after so many people worked so hard to get this thing ultimately on the ballot for the people to have their say without all of this backroom kind of smoky backroom.
It wasn't smoky. Senator Weiler, so this is interesting because the people who support and don't support Proposition 2 don't necessarily align with parties. So what you're about to say might be a total surprise to us.
Yeah, well, it might
be. Or not.
So first of all, I come from the background. I voted for Mark Mattson's final version of his bill in 2016. And I stood on the floor in March of 2016 and said, I'm voting for this because if we don't pass it this year, there's going to be medical marijuana on the ballot in 2018. It'll be a much worse proposal than the final version that we had with the seven amendments from Mark Mattson. And I said it will define the 2018 election cycle. I can show you that video. I was mostly right. Proposition 2 is horrible. In fact, it's so bad that a month or two ago, the proponents started telling people, yes, we know it's flawed, but vote for it anyways and then let the legislature fix it. So now we have an effort before the election. Everyone knows it's going to pass. We have an effort for people getting together and starting to discuss how it could be fixed. And this is not a finalized bill. It's a moving target. It's 96 pages, not 98 pages. I have not seen it. I've read Robert Gerke's article. But this is exactly what we want our state leaders doing, saying, okay, the cat's out of the bag. We're going to have medical marijuana in Utah. What should it look like? And eventually, hopefully, something will coalesce and then something will go public and we'll have public hearings about it. It will be amended, it'll be substituted, and we'll get to where we want to be. But it's hard to say, it's hard to criticize anyone for having this debate when even the Prop 2 proponents have said, we know it has flaws, we know it's going to have to be tweaked. And so they're discussing the tweaks. This is not the lowest point in the state of Utah. This is preparing for the inevitable.
Yeah, from the center, I have to say I still struggle with this one a little bit. I think in partly because of the process, because I don't want it in that non-smoke back room, non-smoke filled back room. That was difficult to say. We want things out in the open and, you know, people obviously need to have these conversations. But I also wonder how this reflects on the initiative process. We're putting things out to the voters, but we know that there are already these discussions that voters don't know about to try to change things. And I want to ask both of you something as well, because no matter what, we think that there might be a special session called very soon. Well, first of all, let's take a survey. If this fails, is there a special session to pass medical marijuana legislation?
If the ballot proposition fails? No, never.
Senator Wyler?
Well, Governor Herbert said that he'll call a special session in November whether it passes or fails. Okay. I don't think he was lying.
Okay. So this is my
other question. I think he'll change his mind, just like he did on 0.5% alcohol, where he said, don't worry, we know this is a terrible bill, we'll change it. You know what? After elections, minds change. I don't think they're going to call a special session on medical marijuana. They're going to say the people spoke. Nope.
Well, I think it's a moot point because it's going to pass. It has over 60% support. And I said in March of 2016, I said, I've been polling this in Bountiful, Utah, Mormonville, and it had 64% in 2016.
So I'm in your district. I'm in North Salt Lake, and my road, my little stretch of road that's probably a quarter mile long, has four pro prop two signs.
I can never get on your road because there's so much like green smoke, coming out of the chimney.
It's Stericycle, Todd.
Oh, that's Stericycle. Yeah. That's West North Salt Lake.
Look, we really have to point out what's happening here, in my opinion. This is disingenuous. These are not people, in my opinion, that want a good, healthy afterwards bill. This is a group of people that don't want medical marijuana, want this stuff leaked out. Maybe we'll have a big grand opening because they want Proposition 2 to fail. And that might be a good way to do it, to divide the people that feel strongly about it by saying, hey, there's no need to vote for it. We got a much better bill coming. And I think that's why they lied. People in that room told reporters that, no, there isn't any bill. It's not. We didn't talk about anything of substance on bills. That's just not true. And that's not the way to do business in the state of Utah.
So since I have some credibility predicting the future, I'm going to tell you what's going to happen. Proposition 2 is going to pass on November 8th. There will be a special session on November 14th.
So
that's
here's
what's going to happen.
And this is maybe a really dicey question for me to ask, but should there be a special session? Because we know, or should we wait for the general session in January? Because we know we're going to have at least, what, 20, 25% turnover? So should we wait for our newly elected people?
The reason,
and this is so sensitive because Senator Baucus is sitting right next to me.
The reason we don't wait is, number one, the way Proposition 2 is drafted, it'll go into effect before the general session. And number two, those 20 to 25 new legislators, they're a big mystery. And so we know who we've got to deal with right now, including Greg Hughes, who's been in the driver's seat on this. And so, no, they're not going to wait. They're going to do it before it goes into effect with the current legislative, including Senator Baucus. If we waited, Senator Baucus wouldn't get a vote.
I agree. There has to be. If it passes, there will be a special session. But if it doesn't pass, Todd, we're betting lunch at the New Yorker.
Okay.
Or Diet Coke.
As long as it's lunch.
I thought you were going to say a drink.
A Diet Coke versus a gin and tonic.
I'm down to sparkling water.
Okay, I want to come back to something Senator Wyler said a minute ago. And you said that you predicted that this would define the election cycle.
I predicted that 2.5 years ago.
Right. And I think in April, our Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox tweeted that he thought that medical marijuana would be the bigger issue than Romney in affecting down ballot races. So let's shift a little bit to the Love McAdams race. How do you think that, so do we think that medical marijuana can affect these?
We should say that one candidate has taken a position and one
so
refuses
Ben McAdams
to take a
came
position
out last,
on anything.
Was it, I've lost track of time and space. Ben McAdams came out last week, earlier this week, saying he's in favor of Prop 2.
Right.
And Congresswoman Love has said
she has not made a decision to get to her moral position on it.
So how much does this affect the race? Are voters listening? Do they care about these endorsements? Does it bring out a new demographic to this midterm?
So the question is who's going to vote that wouldn't have already voted? This is an all vote by mail ballot. Vote by mail has doubled the participation in primaries, and I think it'll do similar in the general election. So the idea is the marijuana issue is so important to millennials that they're going to vote in droves, but I don't think that's going to happen. And Mitt Romney, I think people are really excited to vote for a Mormon for president in Utah in 2012. Well, that was 6 years ago, and that didn't turn out so well.
And it didn't help Love. She lost that year to Matheson.
She did, but she was not an incumbent that year. Matheson
Very
was.
Very
so
true.
Now,
incumbency
now the tide
is powerful.
Has turned there. So I think you're going to get a bump from the millennials and a bump from the medical marijuana crowd. You're also going to get some bump from Republicans who are the hangers-on that still want to see Mitt Romney in D.C., but I don't know that it's going to be that tidal wave of turnout.
So who's going to win, Mia or Ben?
Mia's going to win because she's been ahead in every single poll for a year, You know, so.
Okay.
And
okay,
they both
we got another thing to bet on.
Yeah. Mia's going to win.
So I think marijuana, I just remember the primary in 2016, there were voters at South Davis Junior High in Bountiful that I did not know those people even lived in South in
for
Davis
the
County.
Democratic primary for Bernie Sanders. Yeah.
And I think we see that Bernie-esque type of crowd. I think they turn out.
You know, and I just have to push back a little bit because I know you guys finally had a primary for the Democrats that people were excited about.
You guys, I'm political center.
Okay.
Republicans and Democrats both polled at South Davis Junior High.
All right. I know the Democrats finally had a primary with a few people that showed up and they ran out of paper and all that. You look at the stats for who showed up. There was like 17 times as many Republicans that came out for the primary in 2016 as for the Democrats. But the Democrats, it was a brilliant media strategy by running out of ballots and being ill-prepared. It seemed like there was some type of tsunami, but guess what? Bernie lost the election, and Hillary couldn't even carry Utah, so with a third party in the race.
Okay, another dynamic of this race is that last week Love was going negative, and this week we saw that McAdams is also launching his own attack ads. How negative does this one get? And how, I mean, don't we always say voters hate this? So why are they doing it?
Voters may say they hate it, but they affect elections. And that's all there is to it. People would not run negative ads if they didn't work. And you got Dave Hansen on one side and Andrew Roberts on the other. These guys have been around the block, and that's the way it is. I think there's a bat. It's a false equivalency on the ads they're running. But nonetheless, that's what's happening.
And, you know, I don't like the negative ads. Ballots get mailed out in less than 2 weeks. October 8th is when Salt Lake County is mailing out the ballots. But let's talk about not just going negative, but Ben McAdams ran an ad saying that he's cut taxes every year. He held a truth in taxation hearing required by law in 2015 for a $9.4 million tax increase. So in addition to me being mad about going negative, I'm mad that Ben McAdams is falsifying his own track record.
Okay, I got to respond then. $1,100,000 is what Mia Love screwed up on her campaign, and she's paying back $350,000. Now, tell me, when is the last time Mia Love and Dave Hansen paid back $350,000 when they didn't do anything wrong? This is a serious issue. They cheated in that primary, and it's technical, but believe me, it's serious cheating.
Real quick on that, Mia Love did the same thing that Jim Matheson and a lot of other Utah politicians. She didn't know if she'd have a primary opponent until March, so she raised money before March just in case. Jim Matheson did the exact same thing, and this is Utah has a quirk with the election laws. Trying to make an issue out of something Jim Matheson also did, I think, is a mistake.
Okay, can we talk about something really positive before we get to gripes? Ruth Watkins inaugurated as the first female president at the University of Utah. So that makes it so we now have five women at the helms of our colleges and universities. And that means they are leading, Spencer Cox said this stat at her inauguration, 70% of the students in higher ed in the state.
Let's dream. That's great news. And I can't imagine a better person. She's just terrific on every level. She's really smart, but she also has that gene of being personable and friendly, and he's just going to be terrific. Let's get that 70% figure to staff and faculty and tenured professors and down through the system as well.
You know, we have a female president up at Utah State. We have a female president at UVU. We have a female president now at the University of Utah. I'm a big Ruth Watkins fan. I think this is wonderful for the state of Utah. Bravo.
BYU, one day.
Okay, gripes.
My gripe is about Hope Woodside. She has been my fantasy woman.
Oh, my gosh.
Ever since she got on television so many years ago, I love Hope.
Are you coming out of the closet?
Now that I'm not running again, I can come out. I mean, she is just a perfect human being on so many levels, and I'm going to miss her on Fox and on television and seeing that smiling face. So that's my gripe that she's leaving.
And my gripe is the negative campaign ads, because I'm so tired of people telling us why I shouldn't vote for their opponent. Tell me what you're going to do in your next term if you're an incumbent, or what you're going to do if you're elected. That's what I want to know as a voter. I don't live in the McAdams love, but I hate the negative stuff, and it seems like that's all we hear anymore.
Yeah, I was really, really hoping that one wasn't going to go negative. That disappointed me as well. My gripe is that at President Watkins' inauguration, she held up a little pillow at the University of Utah bookstore. You can buy a little pillow that says, "A Utah Man Am I." And they had a special pillow made for her that said, "Utah Woman Am I." And my gripe is that I cannot purchase that pillow for myself. So this is a note to the U of U bookstore. I will buy that for myself, all my sisters, my mother, for Christmas presents. So get on that. Sales will go through the roof. So you've been listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. Senator Jim DeBacus has represented the left. Senator Todd Weiler has represented the right. I'm Morgan Lancotti in the middle. Our program was produced by the wonderful Emily Means. Thanks for listening.